You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. My name is Cora Zon. Now it's time for a wonderful interview with Healesville Sanctuary's director, Ross Williamson. Hello, Ross.
Hello, Cora. How are you?
Very well, thank you. It is so wonderful to have you on the program today.
Thank you.
So tell us a bit about the history of the Healesville Sanctuary.
Okay. We celebrated our 90th anniversary of opening to the public last year. And just last week celebrated our 91st year. So which is a fantastic stint. You know, it's a very long time, and it's a bit over 100 years since the land was first put aside to caring for Australian wildlife. So 91 years young. It's grown and it's changed over those 91 years, but a few of the fundamentals really haven't changed. So the fact that we really are exclusively, entirely dedicated to Australian wildlife hasn't changed in that entire period, and it's not something that's ever likely to change. It's grown, it's evolved. Animals have come and gone, people have come and gone, but the fundamentals of the sanctuary are the same as they were 91 years ago.
Mm, it's such a fabulous place. It's such a fabulous local resource or community space, something that we can share here in the Yarra Valley. Mm. We're so lucky to have the Healesville Sanctuary right here on our doorstep. So tell us a bit about what some of your future plans are.
Well, some of the big things that we've got on at the moment, where our most of our effort at the moment is going into, say, three or four different projects. The big one at the moment is that we're just putting the finishing touches to some platypus rescue and rehabilitation facilities. So after the black summer fires in 1920, we decided that we really needed to get some facilities where we could take platypus that are either badly affected by drought or injured or ill or affected by fires. And so we managed to get some funding to do that. And we've just finished a really nice facility where animals that come in that we've managed to get medically fit through our wildlife hospital can be put into these new habitats, and over days or perhaps even weeks, they'll get fed and they'll be treated and they'll get fit enough so they can go back into the wild and compete. We're about to start building a new intensive care unit specifically for platypus. Platypus have special needs, as you'd expect, so we've got that project just about to start. So that will give us really world-class facilities to rehabilitate rescued, injured and ill plats. But the other big part of that project is we're going to rebuild we're hoping to rebuild our world of platypus. So that's that wonderful mud brick building that we've got that houses the plats. It is now 30 years old, and it's time for rejuvenation. So we've been going over the last 12 months. We've been getting plans together to redo that. We're going to fix a lot of the problems that exist with a 30-year-old building. So there's a whole stack of things that we want to improve for the animals and for the staff and for the visitors. So we're in the final throes of doing that. The budget for that has come back a little bit, a little bit more than the money that we've actually got. So we're looking around. How do we trim a few things off to reduce costs, but also who might be interested in partnering with us to help us out with that? So that's taking up a lot of our attention at the moment. So that's some big projects that we're really keen to see through to a successful conclusion. The other big one that we've got on at the moment is that we're building a new intensive care unit and new staff facilities up at our wildlife hospital. It's been a dream for a long time to get a really good dedicated space for our intensive care for the wildlife. As you probably know, we have an open door policy for injured wildlife, so anybody can bring in animals. We're open 365 days of the year. We've got probably the best wildlife hospital in Australia, with some of the best, most expert vet staff and vet nurses. And but we've never had a really good space for intensive care. A lot of animals that come in really do need specialist care and some really quite intensive care. Currently, the intensive care facilities are at the end of a corridor in the hospital. So what we're doing is we're going to use the current staff facilities, so their office spaces, as the intensive care unit, and we're building some new office spaces above the car park, just in Badger Creek Road, if you know that area. So that work has started. We're building the staff facilities first, and once we shift the staff into those, we can get in and build our new community intensive care unit. So that's really exciting, and that was it was a wonderful occasion when we had this idea what we wanted to do, and we were talking to this foundation, this philanthropic foundation, about, you know, would they fund just the detailed plans for it, and they were quite interested, and then they went quiet on us for a while, and we thought, oh, you know, they've lost interest, they're not going to do it. And we eventually got in touch with them and said, are you still interested? We haven't heard anything from you. And they said, yeah, we're still interested, but we're not interested in just doing the detailed planning. We'll fund the whole thing. So it was staggering. And it's $3.5 million worth of work that our foundation just decided that it was a really good investment. They really believed in what we were doing, and they decided to get behind us.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, staggering.
Fantastic.
Yeah, really good.
People want to help the Healesville Sanctuary.
They do. Mm. Yeah, they people are really support what we do. They can clearly understand what we're trying to achieve there. They do want to get behind us and help us out. The level of support for the sanctuary, you know, I've been there for over 8 years, and I'm still blown away on a regular basis just how strong the support is for the place.
Fantastic. We'll hear a bit more about what happens at the sanctuary after a song. You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. We have a special guest on the program today. We have Ross Williamson, who is the director of Healesville Sanctuary. Ross, one of the key focuses of the sanctuary is working with threatened species. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. Healesville Sanctuary is part of Zoos Victoria. So Zoos Victoria is us, Melbourne Zoo, Werribee Open Range Zoo, and recently we added Kyabram Fauna Park into it. Zoos Victoria has a really long-term commitment to what we call Fighting Extinction. That's the name of the program. And what we did over 10 years ago was decide that it wasn't acceptable for species to go extinct in this day and age. It was still happening. We wanted to do something about it. And we made a commitment to do everything we could possibly do to prevent the extinction of terrestrial vertebrates in Victoria. And what we did was we looked at all the different species in Victoria and asked the question, is this species going to likely to go extinct in the next 10 years or not? And at the time, we came up with a list of about 20 different species, and we've since expanded out to 27. So there's 27 species that we actively work on in our Fighting Extinction program. We've got 12 of those at Healesville Sanctuary, and we do things like they range from breeding animals for release back into the wild, because we're not interested in just holding examples of threatened species. What we're about is we want these species to recover in the wild, so we want animals in the wild where they belong and in secure populations. So we breed for release, and good examples of that are the Helmeted Honey Eater program, and we've been involved in that since 1989. And our frog programs. So we've been involved in southern corroboree frogs and northern corroboree frogs for a very long time, and we breed eggs and tadpoles for release back into the wild. But we've also got things like we're involved in a much wider insurance program for Tasmanian devils. You'd be aware that possibly that there's a contagious cancer that's going through the population in Tassie and threatening that entire species with extinction. Back in 2006, a group of zoos and like-minded institutions got together and said, well, we need to do something about this. We don't have a cure for this cancer yet. So what we'll do is we'll create a disease-free population outside of Tassie that if the species did go extinct, we would have these animals to reintroduce and we could repopulate. So we stuck our hand up for that. So we are committed to having about 50 Tassie devils at any one time as part of that captive insurance population, we call it. And it's a long-term commitment. There's no end date. We're just going to keep going until we either find a cure for the disease, or we are called upon to repopulate Tassie with these animals. We've also got species that, like mountain pygmy possums, are really special marsupial. It's the only marsupial that hibernates. They're up in the alpine areas. Our deep concern for those guys is that they're only in small numbers in distributed pockets across the Alps, but if their habitat fails at any stage, so the snow doesn't arrive one year, so they're fully exposed during their hibernating period to the temperature fluctuations, because snow provides a bit of a blanket for them, or one of their primary food sources, like bogon moths, fail, if their habitat becomes unsuitable, we'll need to go in, salvage animals and bring them back to the sanctuary and hold them until their habitat repairs itself, and then when we can put them back out. So we've had a program over the last decade or so of learning how to hold animals across generations, so that if the habitat does fail, we can salvage animals, hold them until the habitat repairs, and then put them back out. They're at the forefront of climate change. So as the planet warms up, the habitat changes, and they've got nowhere to go. They can't climb any higher. They're right at the top of those Alps, and if climate change changes their habitat, then they're in serious trouble. So there's a range of different reasons why we might get involved in a threatened species, but the end result in every case is to make sure that they survive in the wild. So as soon as we can say, okay, they're fixed, they're secure, we can back out of that species and move on to something else.
Mm. Yeah, these are really long-term programs, and like you said, like no end in sight, really. So it's a commitment, that's what I'm trying to say. You've made a commitment to this. And one of the things that you're doing at the sanctuary is sharing the knowledge of how to care for our wildlife with students in schools. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. Well, we see every visitor to the sanctuary as an opportunity to talk to people about Australian wildlife, and hopefully they leave the place knowing a little bit more about our locals and what their needs are and what they can do to actually support them. But our schools program is really at the pointy end. So Zoos Victoria has got a strong schools program at each of the properties. And at Hillsville, we've got a small team of educators. And we provide schools with curriculum-based programs that are tied into the sanctuary for any school in the state to come and join in. So that's from prep through to year 12. And so the curriculum-based, specifically designed, primarily focused on the Australian wildlife and our threatened species, But also increasingly we're working on First Peoples cultures and providing opportunities for schools to get involved in those. So we've got a number of First Nations educators that work with us, and they've developed a range of different programs that they can deliver to schools. So we have had over 20,000 students so far this year. We will get hopefully up to around 25,000, and we'd like to see that increase over time. And it's a really strong program. Great to see the schools come through. They get a huge amount out of it, and as do we. You know, it's a lot of fun seeing bunches of school kids having a really good time at the Century and learning at the same time.
Going back to the Indigenous work that you do, in your future plans, you're thinking about adding a bit more information to the Sanctuary.
Sure. We've been working on this for a very long time. And if you walk around the Sanctuary, you'll see stories and information about Wurundjeri, all scattered all over the place. So we use language, we use names, we tell stories that we've been given approval to use. We tell people about the history of the Corranderk, because the Sanctuary is actually on Corranderk land that was part of the Aboriginal station. So there's that strong recognition of the history of the place, the connection to country and the connection to Wurundjeri people. We're trying to build that as much as we possibly can. And so we've been talking to people, to Wurundjeri elders, about how we go about doing that. And one of the things we're looking at now is extending the work that we do, and with proper approvals, introducing the idea of layers of country, which is a Wurundjeri concept about how being on country is sort of the all-encompassing idea, but people, animals, trees can be part of below country or water country or forest country, sky country, wind country. So we're looking at, well, how do we tell those stories at the Sanctuary, and how do we, you know, maybe tell stories about koalas that might be in forest country but it might also be in wind country, platypus that can be in water country and below country. So we're doing a lot of work at the moment seeing where those things can take us in how we continue to evolve the stories that we tell at the Sanctuary about the importance of country and the part that wildlife play in it.
And with that, you've spoken about reorganising the Sanctuary a little bit.
Yeah, we're always trying to refresh the way we do things. So we can't stand still. And so we're always thinking about, well, what animals, you know, really work well at the Sanctuary? What can live in great welfare, because animal welfare is one of our cornerstones. What are happy to engage with people, and also what animals we can sustainably have, because it's we don't collect from the wild, and so we rely on breeding ourselves or working with partners. So there's a range of things that go to inform us what animals we can have. And, you know, we need to think about, well, what's the best habitat for them? Which ones can work well together? How do we provide the best space? And how do we configure the place to tell those stories in the best way we possibly can? So we're always thinking about how to refresh the place, how to create new experiences, how do we improve the stories that we tell, and how do we improve that visitor experience and that visitor engagement?
You're listening to Yarraville FM 99.1. Our very special guest today is the director of Healesville Sanctuary, Ross Williamson. Could you tell us a bit about what's happening with the veterinary hospital at the Sanctuary?
Sure. The vet hospital is something we're very, very proud of. It was primarily set up to service our own animals, of course, but over the years we've expanded more and more into just servicing or helping out injured wildlife, sick and injured wildlife from all over Melbourne and Victoria. We're sort of victims of our own success because it's grown from, you know, a few hundred individuals each year through to we treat well over 2,000 animals on average each year, and it keeps on growing by, you know, every year it keeps on growing. We see all sorts of animals, reptiles, lots and lots of birds, kangaroos, koalas. Unfortunately, we have often have runs of animals, and just in the last month we saw five platypus in 1 week. Had been entangled in litter, and unfortunately we lost two of those animals, but three were able to disentangle them and treat their wounds and get them back into the wild, which, you know, that's a good result. If we weren't there, you know, all five would have died, unfortunately. So we're really proud of what we do at the hospital. It requires us to have a completely separate team because we have to maintain biosecurity. So it's not just a matter of our existing vets who are working on the resident animals, stepping out and doing some work on an animal that gets brought in. We have an entire team. We have a whole theatre that we dedicate just to wildlife. And we get animals in, you know, every day of the week, every week of the year. One of the things that we did recently was to create the new raptor rehab facility, which if people drive past the sanctuary, they'd see this lovely timber building, and if you come into the sanctuary, you get an even better view. We built that because we had always had challenges in getting large birds of prey, raptors, fit enough for release. These things like eagles and harriers are birds of that type, that size. We can get them medically fit. We're fantastic at mending broken wings and pinning bones and doing wonderful work like that. But we couldn't get them to the point where we were really happy that they were fit enough to go out and compete and find a territory. So we pitched it out to our supporters, and some fantastic anonymous donors came up and gave us $500,000 to do that. And the Victorian government stepped in and helped us out with the rest of the funds, and we built this facility. It's 100 metres around, so birds can fly in a circle and they can go around as many times as they like. We have six different spaces for birds, so we can treat six animals at any one time. And we can do that without actually physically having to touch the birds, which is what we used to do before we had this facility. It's been an amazing success. We only opened it August 2003, so it hasn't been open for very long. But the number of animals that we've been treating has gone through the roof. So word has got out that amongst the wildlife carers that we've got this facility. So lots of wildlife carers who have injured birds that they've been treating, they don't need any more veterinary treatment, but they do need to get that exercise, to get that fitness, but also to get assessed how are they flying? Are they fully cured? And are they ready to go out? And it's not only increased our numbers, but it's made it really efficient for us. So animals that we might have had to keep for 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks, we are often looking at them, getting them fly. The vets can have a look at them and say, actually, that bird's ready to go now. So we've shortened the time frame that animals are kept in care, which is an even better result.
Mm. We have brought in a couple of birds ourselves, and we were able to release them.
Mm.
But that aspect of making sure that they were flying fit was something we had to wait for, and then calls in, yep, they're good to go now.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a key part of what we do. We have to be sure that You know, the end result is we want to get these animals back out into the wild where they belong, and if we need to be sure that they can have a reasonably good chance of doing that. So we're very careful about making that assessment and giving the animal the best chance. But we also part of our what we're trying to do is minimise the pain and suffering of animals. So if animals really can't be fixed, or we can't get them to the stage where they're going to survive out in the wild, then the best thing is a painless end for them, which is tough on the team to do, but you know, everybody understands that that's a necessary part of what we do. We can't tolerate animals suffering any longer than they need to suffer.
Yes, I mean, and it is a way of caring for the animal.
It is, yeah, and it's what we call compassionate conservation. So it's an idea that we talk about a lot, and you know, the threatened species program is a huge part of what we do. But sometimes when you concentrate on the species, you forget about the individuals. And compassionate conservation really is about remembering that you know, we're dealing with individual animals, and they can experience fear and pain and even happiness and joy, and that's as important to us as fighting the extinction of a threatened species.
I think that's one of the things I really love about the sanctuary. We brought in, for example, a magpie that was injured, and that one was able to be released once it was fixed, and also a king parrot. But then we might have times when, for example, we brought in a tawny frogmouth, and that was not going to make it. So
yeah.
It ended its suffering.
Yeah, yeah.
There's that balance.
It is.
But what's great is the wonderful feeling when you do get to release the bird.
Oh, absolutely. And we try and follow up with people. If somebody brings something in, we ask them, do you want to know what happens to the animal? And we will give them a call back and let them know.
Yeah.
So we try and care about the people that are involved as well, which we recognise that it can be quite a traumatic experience to find an injured animal and have to deal with it. People are vitally interested in what happens to it.
Absolutely. I mean, you're given an option to come back and release it in the environment that you found it, which is what we've chosen to do. Release it exactly where or close to where we found it.
Yeah.
You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1. Our very special guest on the show today is Ross Williamson, who is the director at Healesville Sanctuary. Ross, the Healesville Sanctuary has a connection with a lot of different institutions. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Look, we have lots and lots of partners besides the other zoos that we partner with. We have partners in our threatened species program. So a really good example is the helmeted honey eater. So there's two government departments that we work with, so Parks Victoria and TIGA. I won't say what TIGA stands for, but people will know it. But one of the other big ones is the Friends of the Helmeted Honey Eater, and that is an astonishing group of volunteers that have been working on hee-hos, we call them, helmeted honey eaters, for decades, and they have been a huge part of preventing that species from going extinct. So we've been working with them for a very long time. You know, we breed the birds for release out into the wild, and the Friends group do a lot of the monitoring, do a lot of the feeding, making sure that those birds have got the best chance of surviving and building new generations out in the wild. So lots of Friends groups, lots of government departments, lots of research institutions. So we have quite a few research programs that are based at the sanctuary. So at the hospital, for example, we have two vet residents who are doing their master's degrees at Melbourne University. So they spend 2 years doing their master's, 6 months of each year they're doing their research at the university, 6 months of the year they're collecting data at the sanctuary, but also doing clinical work, learning about how to treat Australian wildlife. We have quite a few genetic rescue programs with our threatened species, where one of the problems with threatened species when their populations get so low, their genetic diversity really suffers. So we've got programs, particularly with some groups from Melbourne University, on how we can improve the genetic diversity in those animals so they have that genetic fitness to survive in the wild. And one of the other ones that we're quite proud of is we have a detection dog program based at the sanctuary. So we're using a group of different dogs that have been trained to sniff out threatened species or the burrows of platypus or whether a Tasmanian devil is coming into estrus. So she's ready to mate, which is a very short time period, and you know, we want to really hone in on that. So there's a whole range of different things that we're doing, and that work involves a range of different partners as well.
Wow, fantastic.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, at the sanctuary, when you go to see, shall I call it a show?
Yeah, presentation.
A presentation. Yep. You do train the animals in their natural behaviours so that you can see them for yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Look, we certainly want to give people a really good idea of the natural behaviours of birds. So we've been working on that, trying to improve that as much as we possibly can. And we like to show, you know, like the black-breasted buzzard is a really good example of where it uses a rock to crack open an emu egg, which if you've been to the sanctuary and been to the Spirits of the Sky presentation, you would have seen that. The way that birds fly, the way that they use the space, and how they interact with people. So it's a key feature of what we do, and we're particularly keen on not just showing that, but we're also trying to move away from how raptors, birds of prey, have been traditionally trained, and moving into a new area of, rather than using that falconry style of training, which is really quite domineering from people onto the animals, giving animals choice and control. That's sort of the basis of our animal welfare work, and giving them the capacity to choose whether they want to participate in that particular training exercise or that particular presentation. And the vast majority of the time they do, but this is a brand new way of thinking about how to work with animals and how to train animals. And so I like to think that we're leading the world in that work. And it's a slow and steady process, and we're learning as much as the animals in that process. But it's a lot of fun to watch really clever keepers breaking ground in new areas that are going to change the way that we live and work with animals.
Mm. And it has a very practical purpose too, for example, when they require their visit at the vet.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so our ability to... some of our dingoes are a really good example. We've managed to get them... some of them to the point where we can just give them an injection through the fence and train them to, from there, just walk into a crate. They walk into the crate, they give a bit of a yawn, have a bit of a nap. We take them up to the vets, they get checked out, we do what we need to do. They wake up in exactly the same spot and wander off as if nothing's happened. It's a really wonderful way of working with animals. It shows them the respect that they deserve. We don't have to physically restrain animals. We give them choice and control, and it's a much, much better for us and better for the animals. Better for the animals because they don't have that stress, and better for the keepers because they don't have to dominate animals. They don't have to physically restrain them, And that can take a toll on people as well. We don't want to have to operate that way with animals. We want to treat them as partners and treat them respectfully, and this is the way we're trying to do it.
Yeah, it's great. Well, the Healesville Sanctuary has so much happening. Could you just tell us a little bit about how membership helps the sanctuary?
Look, we have a great membership program. Over 350,000 members now. People can buy a membership. It's sort of the cost is based on a little bit less than three visits to any of our zoos. The membership obviously goes into support all four zoos across Victoria and support what we do. And it's a key part of our funding base. We get about 20% of our funding from the government, and the other 80% we have to make ourselves. And we make it through memberships, through people buying tickets at the gate, through buying stuff from the shops, our catering, our zoo activities, our close-up encounters and things like that. We have to treat ourselves as a business, but the members are a part of the business, but they're also part of the zoo family. So they get to go to any of the zoos as many times of the year as they like. There are other benefits. They get entry into some of our sister zoos, like Taronga up in Sydney, and Adelaide Zoo in Adelaide, obviously. But they're also a big part of the support they get. They, I hope, have the satisfaction in knowing that they support what we do. So it's not just supporting the day-to-day function of the sanctuary, but it's supporting the wildlife hospital. It's supporting the work that we do on helmeted honeyeaters, on mountain pygmy possums, Tassie devils, all of that threatened species work our members are directly supporting. So I'd encourage people, you get a great benefit out of it, but you're also get the satisfaction of knowing that you're supporting helping injured wildlife and saving threatened species. So it's a win-win for everybody.
Thank you so much for coming on the program
today. It's a pleasure, Cora.